Most business podcasts today focus on the 1%, the nationally known larger-than-life personalities, entrepreneurs, and celebrities with interesting business stories. Business Exit Stories shares the stories of the other 99% of unheralded entrepreneurs that own successful companies in manufacturing, retail, logistics, telecommunications, construction, food service, and in every imaginable type of business in every state and city around the country. These are the stories told by the deal makers that facilitate exits. These are the mergers and acquisition specialists, business brokerages, financial and wealth planners, CPAs, appraisers, and attorneys. By listening to their stories, you'll learn what the entrepreneurs and business owners they represent did right and what they did wrong when it comes to exiting their business through a sale or a merger. In fact, you'll not only learn how they avoided disastrous exits, but how they positioned their companies for an out-of-the-ballpark home run when they exited their business. And here's your host, Marvin L. Storm.
Today we have Andy Cagnetta as our guest. The first transaction that Andy will share with us has several great takeaways. One of the takeaways is that private equity deals don't always work out. In this story, an owner of a waste management container company had sold his business to a private equity group. However, the private equity group abandoned the business. Here is where the story gets really interesting. The owner's daughter got her father to agree to allow her to assume control of the abandoned business. After building up the business, the daughter had a $5 million cash offer on the table. However, that deal didn't happen. Listen closely to the reasons why. Andy shares a story of how a bad fit led to the buyer of a business simply abandoning it and walking away. In another transaction, Andy shares how a company had a great product to target Oprah Winfrey and land her as a client and was able to get her product on Oprah's Favorite Things, which helped explode the company's growth. Finally, Andy shares a story where a business sold in record time because the transaction involved a strategic buyer, and then discusses the difference between strategic and financial transactions. Hi, this is Marvin L. Storm with the Business Exit Stories podcast. Today, we're here with Andy Cagnetta. Andy, would you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your company?
Sure. My name is Andy Cagnetta. I've been in the industry for just about 25 years. I came to Transworld as a buyer in 1994, met the owners then. They eventually, through some conversations when I was looking to buy business, asked me to join the firm. I joined the firm and 2 years later, I bought it. I've grown it from our one office here in Fort Lauderdale. I've eventually, in 2010, franchised the business. And now we've grown Transworld into the largest business brokerage in the world. We have 200 plus offices and 500 intermediaries throughout the world. So it's been a fun ride.
Well, sounds like it. Well, I'd like to have you reach into your bag of transactions that you've done over the years and share a couple of transactions that probably didn't go all that well and didn't have the outcome that was anticipated.
Yeah. So, you know, we certainly don't like when that happens. Our motto is good deals for good people. And inevitably, buying a business is a risk. And so every once in a while, it just doesn't match up. My first story is oftentimes sellers don't realize when their ship has come in. So we had a young woman who had a manufacturing business in the space of waste equipment and containers and, you know, big welding metal business. And you wouldn't imagine a young woman in that business, but her dad had previously owned the business and still owned the real estate. And he had sold it to a private equity group back in the day. And I don't know what happened in that deal, but the private equity group eventually closed that business and gave it back to the ownership, or at least abandoned it in the old factory. And so the father, not wanting to start it again or not wanting to continue the business, the daughter stepped forward as a 20-something-year-old and said, "Dad, I've got this. Let me do it." So she did. And she, in the meantime, you know, she was just out of college, grew the business, did a great job, and, you know, got married and wanted to start a family and really didn't want to spend the time continuing to grow the business. And we had brought her a public company that offered her about $5 million in cash, a little bit over that.
Andy, how long did she work the business to get it to the point of selling it?
I think it was about 5 years. It was about 5 years that she had had it. So she did a great job of kind of, you know, reactivating it, rehiring all the employees, going out there into the industry. Her dad was very well known, and they were able to build the business again. We had an offer for them. We're, you know, getting through due diligence.
And this offer was from a public company, you said?
Yeah, it was from a public company and was all cash. And it was enough money for her to say, hey, listen, this is plenty of money for me to go home and, you know, start my family and, you know, grow it and be able to be, you know, a full-time mom and not really have to worry about this. You know, it was a big, dirty business. I mean, you know, we're talking 20,000 square feet of manufacturing and welding and time away to go to sell things at conferences. So she definitely wanted to take a step back. So in the negotiations, what happened was, is that she wasn't really paying a market rent. You know, the rent we imputed was pretty low, and I'm not sure the rent she was paying her dad, because her dad still owned the building, was low. And the public company, of course, in their EBITDA calculations, were not expecting the rent to go up. And in the negotiations, you know, her dad stepped forward and said, hey, I want, you know, 2x times the rent. And, you know, this, of course, not only hurt the negotiations, but hurt the valuation.
So just for clarification here, let's say it's $100,000 a year that they were paying in rent at the time.
Right.
And the father said, well, now that there's a new buyer, this is way below market. I want market rents, which is $200,000. And that's what I need to go through with this transaction. So I'm paid market rent.
Correct. Correct. So the public company did not want to pay that much rent. And if they were going to pay that much rent, they wanted a discount of price. If they're paying 5x EBITDA and all of a sudden there was another, you know, $100,000 out of the EBITDA, they would want a $500,000 haircut on the price.
And for our audience that may not know EBITDA, would you define that for us?
Sure. Earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So it's basically the profits that was recognized by the acquirer in the due diligence.
So in this transaction, if it was $200,000 that they were paying for rent, they wanted to take that amount that they would be paying an increased rent times 5 and reduce the sales price from $5 million to $4
million. Yes.
And have that rent reflect in the value of the business if they're going to pay that much rent.
Yes. And so that wasn't palatable, of course, to her. She wanted her price. You know, we tried to get the family to have reduced rent for a term. They said, well, why don't you just take half the factory? But that really didn't work because you couldn't really crunch all the equipment necessary to create the sales that you needed to generate. And plus, they were looking to expand the business like everybody who buys a business is. So at the end of the day, everybody parted ways. And they stuck their feet in the ground and said, hey, we're not budging on this price. Just after that, the building boom kind of stopped. It was like 2007 or 8. The gross sales of the business dropped precipitously. We did have some hurricanes in 2004 and 2005, which also drove up sales as far as construction and things like that were concerned, which was the big user of these kind of waste containers. And what happened was the daughter still wanted to sell this. You know, the owner of the business still wanted to raise her family. She didn't want the headache of the business, and she wanted, you know, basically her $5 million. And at the end of the day, that was no longer available. I mean, the business's value probably dropped to about $1 million or $2 million at best, even if we were able to find a strategic buyer, which all went away. The public company went away. They are back in business now, or they certainly stopped expanding. We kept meeting over the years, 2008, 2009, 2010, to, you know, explore her options every once in a while because she really wanted to go. And her dad wasn't well. He would come to the business and kind of consult and kind of say hello every day. And so she was still running the business. It was certainly a grind, especially when they weren't making as much money or almost next to nothing. And so she explained to me one day that her family was still mad at me. And I'm like, still mad at me? And they said, yeah, we're still mad at you because you didn't tell us what a great deal we had on the table. And if you were more insistent, perhaps we would have taken that rent deal and we would have taken the whole deal. I tell that story a lot. It was a disappointment to me, to the family. And when people are faced with, you know, not seeing the forest through the trees or that not realizing when their ship has come in, I tell that story because, you know, something small, and it wasn't small, it was still a lot of money, but they were missing the bigger picture.
Well, in transactions like that, it is kind of tough to look through the forest and see the trees because $1 million is still a lot of money. But a cash offer, you just don't know what's around the corner.
Yeah, but we really felt like it could have been solved with a reduced rent for the first 2 years and then had gradual increases to get the family to the rent factor that they wanted. But that was not to be the case.
Well, that is a tough story to tell, but I guess stories like that can frame future discussions and other transactions and show what could happen and save other people from suffering similar type of outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the economy is not going to stay static forever. Your health is not always going to be there. There's going to be opportunities to sell because of roll-ups or public entities that are coming around and spending bigger dollars for and extending themselves and paying all cash. And when those things happen, it's time to really look at yourself in the mirror and say, it may be time to go.
Point well taken. Well, how about another story that may have a little bit different twist to it, but still didn't work out as planned?
Yeah, so my other story is one of my favorite. It's not my favorite. It's my favorite bad story, let's put it that way. So I was selling a small pool route, a pool business that comes and cleans your pool every week and does some maintenance. And the business was doing very well. And the gentleman who owned it wanted to retire. His back, it was hurting him. He had already had a back operation. It is somewhat of a demanding job physically to clean pools. And I had it for sale. And another broker who was not working in my business, didn't work for us. We do co-broke. We work with other brokers. Brought a nice buyer, a great buyer. He was a young computer engineer that was working from home. You know, every once in a while, once a week, I guess, you know, that's when your pools are clean. He would see his pool cleaner walk by with his headphones on and kind of bop into the music. And he'd see his, you know, cleaning the pool and it was bright and sunny out and the guy had a nice tan. And he was saying to himself, gee, I really can't stand being, you know, looking at a computer all day long. I'm going stir crazy in this, you know, in this job. This is a dead end job. I want to get out there and enjoy the weather and enjoy building a business on my own. And so he was the buyer and he came forward and he was really a go-getter and he had a young wife and they came to the closing table and he had cards and he had 10 new pools already from his friends and his family. So he had already grown the business by almost 10% and he was hiring an employee. He really had it going and we were all excited for him and we had become friendly, me and him, because we were of similar age and we had a young child and I think one on the way at the time. And so he bought the business and then it must have been only about 3 weeks later, he calls me in a panic and he said, I hate this job. I can't stand the chemicals. I can't stand being so hot. This is backbreaking work. I am not set up to do manual labor. Andy, you have to help me sell this business now. And so I relisted it, you know, and he had borrowed money from his father-in-law. So he was very worried about that. Over time, he exited the business. And put an employee in charge. And anybody who knows a business like that who runs it absentee, very difficult to do. And so he called me one day and he said, Andy, I'm done. He said, I sold off the rest of the clients for about $15,000. The employee was arrested on the West Coast of Florida. He got pulled over. He had drugs in the car and the truck is now impounded. And so I'm done. He said, what do I owe you? I said, nothing. I feel so bad for you. You know, I'm sorry this all happened to you because it wasn't your fault. You know, it just wasn't a good match for me. I thought it was going to be perfect. You thought it was going to be perfect. And so I do tell that story because, and I say it's a fun story because he went on from that. He went on to go back into the computer industry, start a consulting business that he grew to be not only in Florida, but it'd be in Texas. He wound up selling it, I believe, to a subsidiary of IBM for multi-millions of dollars. And so I stayed in touch with him. And so we always kid, you know, we used to kid that he was the pool guy. And I got a call from the local newspaper wanting to do a story on people who have failed in business. And he was my first thought. So he did the article and he called me again, kind of grumbling. He's like, Andy, I can't believe you talked me into that article because people have been calling me all day, my friends and people who never, and clients who never knew I was in the pool business. And they're calling me about, you know, hey, can you come over and do my pool? It's a little green. that's my other bad story.
That's a great story. Well, I guess the takeaway from a story like that is that you got to be sure it's a good fit. You know, it might look great to be out there with your earbuds in and rocking with the music, but the real life of a pool guy is a lot of manual labor, and it is hot out there, especially in Florida.
Yeah, it's hot.
Hot and humid.
Very hot. And, you know, I think what you also learn is that you're never sure about who's going to do well in business. I mean, I have other stories of people that I absolutely didn't think they would do. Would do well, and they did great. So there's, you know, lots of examples of that over time. And I do warn people that, you know, running a business is a tough thing, but it's hard to predict who's going to do well and who's not.
Well, great, Andy. How about a story that would be a good story that had a really good outcome, maybe kind of over the fence type of home run?
Yeah. So one of my favorite stories is a company that's still in business and she's still doing really well. Her name is Lori Carmel, and she is the president and CEO of WeTakeTheCake.com. And she immigrated from Canada, and she was looking to buy a business down here in Florida. And she came to us, and WeTakeTheCake was a turnaround at the time. It really wasn't making a lot of money, but she liked it. She was a marketer by trade. She certainly wasn't a baker, and she was a marketer. And she was looking for something that she could market and do well with. And she really liked some of the products that WeTakeTheCake had. And so she bought it and was going through the customer list. And she noticed a company by the name of Harpo Enterprises. And if anybody knows, Harpo spelled backwards is Oprah.
Yep. Harper Enterprises, Oprah. Right.
And that is Oprah's, production company. And she called the person that had bought the cake and she got the person on the phone. She's like, oh, I met the old owner on a plane and I bought one of your key lime bun cakes. And I just love it. I love it so much. And you know what? You know what would be a good idea? If you became one of Oprah's favorite things. And it was kind of like the first foray of Oprah into the favorite things. I think it was literally the second time she had come out with that list.
Well, a lot of fortunes have been made with Oprah's favorite things.
Well, you know, and she did that. And she had a wild spike in demand for that cake in particular. She wound up coming to us and buying another bakery. Just specifically, she didn't want the name of the bakery. She didn't care about the product. It was a cookie company at the time. She was desperate to have expanded capacity to handle all the things that she was doing at the time.
So I assumed a bakery that she was buying wasn't probably making a lot of money. She was just interested in the assets and facility.
Yeah, that's it. You know, and it was funny because it was about 20 minutes away from where her current facility had been, which was a logistics problem that she ran into. But, and to make another long story short, she wound up buying a building and she wound up creating a whole new production facility. And she has done work for Williams-Sonoma. She has done work for some major other brands. She has become Oprah's favorite thing again, I believe.
So she's still in business today.
She is.
In this particular situation, you have a buyer that's looking for something that she can apply her expertise in. She wasn't necessarily interested in becoming a baker, but liked the recipes and knew that it was a good product and figured she could take that and do something with it. And you're telling me she did. She hit it over the fence.
Yeah, she hit it over the fence. And, you know, it goes to show that, you know, when you get into a business, you really got to look kind of in the crevices and in the, you know, behind the, behind everything to find some of the gold. And there was some gold to be found in that business, and she found it and she exploited it and she did a great job. She continues to do a good job. She's a fantastic entrepreneur and marketer. And, you know, if you ever want, I believe, the best birthday cake in the world, go to WeTakeTheCake.com and order one for yourself.
Yeah, good tip. How about another story, perhaps something a little outside of regular everyday businesses?
So one of the my other favorite stories is I was looking to help a high school classmate of mine from Verona, New Jersey. And again, we're here in Florida. We're based here in Florida, that had moved to Florida as well. And she was looking to buy a business, and she was looking specifically for a florist, which eventually she bought, which is another long story. And she was so insistent on buying a business, and we really didn't have a florist for her to buy at the time. So she said, just run through the list of businesses you have. So I was literally clicking my scroll button on my computer, naming the businesses I had for sale, not the names, but the industries. And I said psychology practice, because we do sell medical practices here. And I said, ha ha. And she said, stop. And I said, what do you mean? You're going to buy a psychology practice? She goes, no, my sister, and her sister was 2 years younger than me. She said her sister was a psychologist in New York and really wanted to move to Florida. And we want, you know, we want her to have her down here. My parents are down here. I'm down here. We want her to, you know, start a family down here too. So, and she happens to be here today, and this was on a Saturday. Can you set up an appointment for today before she goes home tomorrow on a plane? And so I made some phone calls. I called the other agent. We wound up getting in touch with the psychologist, and we set up a Saturday meeting. We ran over there and they met. And when you're selling a psychology practice, it's not about, and we've sold several. So it's not necessarily about just finding a buyer. It's finding a buyer that is going to take care of their patients. And so, and with the same philosophies and believes in the same drug therapies and believes in, you know, can handle the patient load. In fact, we've sold two psychology practices for women, and they both felt that they needed another woman to buy it due to the kind of issues they handled. So these two psychologists met, kind of looked like each other, which was kind of scary. One was just basically the 20-year younger version of the other. The psychologist today is still very successful. And, you know, I'm proud to have gotten her start here. It was a small practice, but she built it up over the years, and she's done many things in our community. So it's a great story.
So in selling a medical practice like that, especially a psychology practice where it's a personal services business and they're treating their patients with a certain methodology and, you know, as you said, you know, the treatment of certain types of drugs and the way they treat their patients, they have a very high need to make sure that that philosophy that they hold is carried on through, that their patients are taken care of. And it sounds like in this particular situation, this was a hand in a glove type of fit.
Yeah, it really was. And that's crucial in a lot of medical, but certainly in psychology.
And you indicated that you do have a division of your company that does specifically focus on medical practices.
Yeah, we even have a website, healthcarebizsales.com, that we've had for almost two decades, that we've handled a lot of medical practices over the years. And it's gotten hot and cold in that business. It's probably getting a little hotter these days. It has a lot to do with the way people are compensated, what insurance is, and whether or not they take Medicare or Medicaid. It's certainly a growing business, the healthcare field.
Well, one more story before we wrap it up today, Andy. Maybe something that is a little bit more strategic in nature that you have found, difference between strategic and financial buyers.
Yeah. So we, you know, had a business once upon a time owned by three accountants. It was accounting practice. And I forget how they wound up acquiring the business. It might have been from a prior client, or it might have been by someone in their family being in the business, but it was basically a vending route, but it was a specialized vending route that it was video games in hotels. And these hotels are basically family-friendly hotels.
We're really talking about the freestanding video games, the large box video machines, right?
Large box video machines, air hockey tables, those kind of things, you know, vending machines where you have the little claw. But, you know, mostly in hotels where there's like maybe more than one machine. We're talking like little rooms with three, four, or five machines in them. Their big customer base was in Orlando, Florida, which is obviously home to Disney World.
Yeah, a couple of hotels in that market.
Yeah, a couple of hotels there. Certainly a lot of kids that go there. So they had a series of game rooms from Central Florida down to South Florida. And it was a very good business, very money-making. Of course, accountants had very good books and records. And, you know, the great thing about the business was we were able to identify and close on the sale in 60 days. And they were very happy with that. We went out there, we found the a strategic buyer, someone else who was in that industry. They immediately came in and said, we love it. We were thinking about getting into that line of business. They had other vending products out there, you know, the soda machines and the food machines and those kind of things. So they were just thought it fit perfectly for their, you know, a strategic buy. And they bought it and everybody was really happy. The thing I remember about it the most is the seller, although he was happy we got a deal done in 60 days, he said, you know, I'm paying you a lot of money. He said, I want you to rent the limousine and take me and the partners out to dinner with our wives. And so, you know, I thought it was a strange request, but it was a big commission for us. And I said, okay. So we did it and we're still friends today. It's almost 20 years later and we're still friends with them. We've done a lot of business with them since they're CPAs. And it's been a good relationship.
Maybe Andy, you could talk a little bit about a strategic buyer philosophy or positioning versus a financial buyer and what the differences between the two are.
So a financial buyer is someone that buys a business based purely on the cash flow. And they're looking to get a return on their dollar. And when they buy a business, they're looking at the whole business and they want all the pieces and they need all the pieces to buy that business. So think of someone coming along that wants to buy a business. They've never been in the business or they're not currently in the business and they need everything. They need the customers. They need the vendors. They need all the employees. They need the location. And so they're going to buy based purely on the financials of that business and pay the multiple that's associated in that business. So they're pretty much price fixed. They can't overpay for the business because there's no way for them to make any more money or return on that business than they can make with the assets of that business. A strategic buyer, on the other hand, may already be in that business. And that's what happened here with this vending company. It was another vending company. So think of it that they could not only make the money that that company was making currently, but they already have assets that that company already has. They already have economies of scale where they already have drivers that could pick up the money from the businesses. They already have a person that could maintain the businesses. They already have trucks that could go out there. They already have an accounting firm that could create financials. They already have managers. So when they buy that business, they're not only making the money that that business just grows off, but they're able to leverage everything else they have in their business and may be able to make even more money, therefore willing to pay more money for that business.
That's a great summary. And the accountants in this case found a strategic buyer, and that's one of the reasons you were able to close in 60 days, which generally doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. It you know, I'll remember that one for a long time.
Well, Andy, this has been a great chat and discussion. You've shared some great stories and some really good takeaways from our stories here today. If someone wanted to reach out and get a hold of you, how would they do that?
You could give me a call here at Trans World Business Advisors. You can go to my website at tworld.com. And there's all kinds of ways that you could get in touch with us. tworld.com.
Andy, really appreciate your time. And we'll see everyone back at our next episode.
Marvin, thank you for having me.
Join us on our next episode when our guests will share more stories of how entrepreneurs, founders, and business owners have exited their businesses and learn about what to avoid and what you need to do to successfully position your business for a successful exit. If you enjoyed this podcast, take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts so aspiring entrepreneurs everywhere can find us. If you wish to reach out to any of our guests, please visit our website at www.businessexitstories.com, where you can find more information. Join us next time for more Business Exit Stories.